We're very deliberate about saying we want the best person in the role, and that's very important. We want to be able to broaden the talent pool of the women who are there.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. I am with you once again, Rob Calder, joined by Zoe Carr this week. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me.
Just the two of us this week, as it's a quick little intro before we jump into the main part of the podcast. Once again, if you're able to like, share, subscribe, retweet, rate, review, all the fun stuff that we do with podcasts, you're able to listen along on Apple Podcasts and also on Spotify. We're straight into a coach shout out this week, though.
You know you make me wanna shout out my coaches, out my coaches, out my coaches. Come on now.
Got to admit, it loses a little bit of the charm when I have to sit here by myself dancing around as Zoe looks at me just ashamed of what's going on.
I've never been happier to not have headphones on at the moment.
That's all right. Come on now. This is where we give the coaches a little bit of love. But we do want to share one that came in a little while back that we've held on to for a while now. So this one's come through from the Gold Miners under 15 girls coaches at a Southern Cross challenge. So that was Macy McLeod and Glenn Wolfenden in particular. So the Macy is an exceptional at building relationships and rapport with the girls, and Glenn's knowledge, communication and engagement with the girls was next level throughout this tournament. So wanted to give them the credit they deserve for the amount of work that they put in, which is great to hear for a number of reasons. Like Macy, some of you may remember the article about Macy last year when she came out of Southern Cross Challenge, but is a young coach that is transitioning from her playing background into her coaching background now is starting. So I mean, Zoe, you've had a fair bit to do with Mace, obviously, from the playing background and now into her coaching space. Like it was under 12 Jamboree when we first saw her, what, 3 or 4 years ago now?
Yeah, she came through the pathway, legit, like literally through the pathway, started at under 12s, started as a player and did all of these programs as a player and now is coming through as a coach. And it's really exciting to see. And she's just she's not just a great human, but she's a great role model too for a lot of the younger athletes that, you know, get to the end of their basketball playing career or are starting to look at what's next, as to there are other options and opportunities to stay in the game. And so, you know, she's working really hard and improving with every tournament and every opportunity that she gets. So I've been really proud to see her progress and I'm really excited to see where she goes with her coaching.
Well, and you make a great point there that just because you're in the playing pathway doesn't mean you're always going to be a player, and that's the only thing you can look to doing. I think for a lot of our players, you know, we know those that get to the NBA, WNBA level or Boomers Opals, you know, that's like 0.0001% potentially of the people that are playing in that space. So to try and find another avenue to stay involved in the sport's a really good thing. And I think for a lot of our younger coaches, it gives them a different perspective on what playing is like, because they now see it with a different lens as they're coming through. But it also is great to be giving back to the sport. And, you know, Mace would have had a ton of good coaches on the way through her actual playing career as well. And, you know, it's great to see someone in that space wanting to give back. And she's done a lot with Under 12 Jamboree, Country Metro Challenge, now into the Southern Cross space. Like it's a lot for a young coach, but she's been fantastic all the way through.
And it is, and it is a big commitment, and it's one of the things we talk about a lot when we're discussing getting young or particularly females involved in coaching, is having that flexibility. She's still studying. You know, she's still very young, so we can't load her up with and other coaches like her, male or female. We can't load them up with you have to be at all these different things all the time. But anytime there is something that's, you know, that fits in around study and around work as well, you know, she's the first to put her hand up. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see how she goes and watch her. I love – one of the things I love about Mace particularly is at the end of every, say, tournament or camp or whatever we've had, just that fire burns a little bit brighter with her, with her coaching. And that's really cool to see in such a young coach.
One of the great things too about the way that Macy coaches is – just always smiling, always enjoying her time coaching, whichever team it be with. Like, she's always enjoying coaching. Like, nobody laughed harder than the two of us or Mace when she somehow managed to pick up a stress fracture while coaching. And that probably sums it up really well with just the level of enthusiasm she had amongst, you know, getting around that team for the week.
Yeah. I've lost it a little bit because it's all coming back and it was hilarious. But she didn't stop coaching either, because her focus was those kids and trying to do what was best for them. And we need to also acknowledge Glenn Wolfenden as
Absolutely.
Well and his role yep. in that too. He was just phenomenal, you know, supported her when he needed to, backed off when he needed to. He was just the absolute perfect personality to have with a young coach, and especially a young female coach as well, because we've talked about it on the pod before about the differences that you can have. So he was just outstanding as well, and was great for those kids too. So yeah, we were really lucky to have those two together, and the kids in particular were really lucky to have access to them.
Yeah, and you beat me to it with Glenn. Like, it's a lot of what coaching is, the support network that sits around you that you may not sort of realise that, you know, is the assistant coach there to catch you if you fall, and they can be that sort of safety net, I suppose, at times, but also someone that's going to challenge you a little bit and try and push you forward and inspire you. And Glenn trod that line perfectly for mine. Like, I was around that team a fair bit during the course of the week, and just seeing and hearing the interaction between the two coaches was brilliant. So, you know, again, good job to Glenn on that one, because that's not an easy role to fit into when you don't know the players, you don't really have a relationship with the other coach, but just found a way to make it work all the way through for the betterment of everyone.
Well, and you're a head coach yourself, so
yep, for sure.
That can sometimes be difficult too, but he was fantastic. There was one particular time where Mace lost a little bit of confidence in what she knew the message she wanted, but she lost a little bit of confidence, and she ran it past Glenn. Glenn agreed with it. She then said, "Oh, you go and deliver it." And he's like, "Nope." And made her go and do it, which was just perfect. So yeah, a really good pairing. We got really good results. And when I say results, I don't mean scoreboard, even though they did really well on that as well. Those kids improved so much in such a short time, and a lot of it was attributed to them.
Excellent. So moving into the main part of the podcast now is an interview with Michelle DeHeiden. So for those of you that may not be aware, Michelle is the High Performance Coach Development Senior Lead with AIS Performance. So Michelle will get into her background in coaching a little bit. She's done a lot of work with a project called the Leaky Pipeline, which is in particular trying to encourage more women to stay in the coaching pathway and how that we can not lose them along the way. And we were fortunate enough to work with Michelle a little bit last year in the delivery of her project out at Essendon Football Club, which we'll talk about in a little bit as well. But one of the other things we do talk about as we go through this is the Accelerated Women's Coaching Program. And for those of you that may not have seen it yet, that's been released again this week. So if you are interested in participating on that, jump on the Basketball Victoria website, jump on the Basketball Victoria socials. The link will all be on there. You can jump on the Talking Split socials. The link's on there as well that you can go and have a little bit of a look at. And just, again, another opportunity, another project that we can try and enhance women's coaching in this sort of space. So Zoe and I will jump in with Michelle now. Brilliant to be joined by Michelle DeHeiden, who is the High Performance Coach Development Senior Lead at the AIS Performance Base. Michelle, thank you very much for jumping in. Do you want to just give us a little bit of background in your experience as a coach first?
Absolutely. And look, thank you very much for the invitation. I started my coaching career as a 16-year-old and very quickly fell in love with the role of a coach and the ability to help and support others. And I've been a coach for 40 years. So started coaching in a very small club in the middle of Queensland as a 16-year-old coach. Did my first coaching course and judging course that year. Have travelled the world as a coach, worked at national team level. And I think everything in all my studies and everything were driven around improving my capacity to be a better coach. So certainly it's been a number one love of delivering and supporting athletes in their development.
That's amazing that you started at 16 years old. How did you get involved? Were you involved as an athlete to start off with and then moved into the coaching space, or did you just get a tap on the shoulder? How did it work?
Well, I can tell you I saw the gymnastics on TV at the 1980 Olympics, and I lived in a very tiny country town in New South Wales. And I was like, actually, I'd really like to do gymnastics, but there wasn't a gym club. So when we moved to Brisbane the following year, in 81, was when I started training as a gymnast, and I was not very good. I was a much better coach than an athlete. But, yeah, it's basically when I started training and coaching at the same time.
It's a funny one because I live that world of not being a very good player, so ended up in coaching. So I can appreciate that. Zoe, on the other hand, was a good player, so it's a bit of a different pathway for her. So it is interesting how many people have that passion for the sport and the love for the sport that maybe the playing side doesn't quite work out, or the athlete side doesn't work out, but they go into that coaching space where it's just such a different scope. Did you feel when you started coaching it made you like a better athlete at the same time? You understood it with a different lens?
Yes and no. I think in the years experience I have now working with coaches and those who've transferred from being an athlete, I definitely feel there's a big source of understanding the role of a coach and the tasks that the coach undertakes helps athletes, particularly in the latter part of their career. So it's definitely useful. Did it help me? I was probably a little bit young when I first started out to really appreciate it. And I didn't finish training until I was 21. So probably in the latter part of training it helped me, but not so much in the early part.
Absolutely. Is that something you sort of went through as well, Zoe? Like, you obviously had a playing career. Did you have an eye on coaching and this might be something you wanted to do, or is this not even on the radar?
No, I didn't. Coaching was never even a thought for me. I think I've spoken about it on the pod before. I got into coaching because my niece was about to get cut because they didn't have enough coaches from a team. So I put my hand up and said that I would do it, and then, yeah, caught the bug from there. So I'm really glad that happened. But I do think back sometimes and think, had I coached while I was playing, the things that I've picked up from a coaching perspective, could it have helped me as a player? I do think there's elements that I could have that could have been useful to me as a player. But yeah, that was, I suppose, my journey into it. But Michelle, what sort of challenges? You said you were quite young when you started coaching, and what sort of challenges did you face because of that?
I think I was always pretty confident. All right, and I was always very invested in learning and getting better. I think the challenges I had, particularly very early in my career, was being in a country club in the middle of Queensland with no one to help. So we would travel 3.5 hours to go to a training session on a Saturday morning. But in the club, in the town itself, there were no mentors, there were no support mechanisms. There was no structure around this is how you do it. And I look back now and I've got no idea what I was doing. But I think in the journey that I've had, particularly in the latter part of my career in supporting and developing coaches, I always reflect back on that coach who I was when I started out. Imagine if that was a coach who was just starting out and what did they need? So I think in essence, being able to provide access and resources to young aspirational coaches, no matter where they are, and being able to make sure they've got some support mechanisms. Because I think a young coach starting out can get very overwhelmed with working with parents and being challenged by particularly some aggressive parents when they're just starting out. It can completely put them off. So I think the support structures and resources are really important.
Yeah, and particularly young female coaches too, you've obviously got the element of an adult, which all young coaches would have an issue with, but then there can be extra intimidation for young female coaches, particularly if it is, you know, a male parent, a dad, or, you know, that sort of can come across a fairly aggressive. I know I've had that in the past, and if it wasn't for mentors, I probably would have walked away, to be honest, because yeah. It was a a real terrifying interaction. And yeah. And the first thing I went to, or that my brain went to, was I don't need this. You know, like yeah. I don't want to put myself into a scary situation like this. Whether this is a one in every 2 years, I still don't want that one in 2 years. I think for our young female coaches in particular, all coaches, but definitely yep. our young female coaches, it's there's an added layer of I guess challenge there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think just a couple of comments on that. The Sports Commission, the coaching and officiating team, are actually delivering nationwide for the second year a program for young female mentor coaches in clubs and community spaces. And there's some fabulous resources. But not everyone has access to that, right? Yep. So I think that's tough. And I think for clubs who are employing young coaches, particularly making sure that they've got a mentor and they've got a support person who can help them potentially have some of those more difficult conversations.
And I think, what I'm about to say is going to come across a little bit aggressive towards our associations, I guess, but I think we've got to step away from only worrying about making sure we have coaches. So I think what ends up happening is we have all these athletes, which is fantastic, and we want to make sure we service them and we get them into teams, etc. But it's almost like, okay, we've got a coach for that team. Now we move on. We've got a coach for that team. Now we can move on to the next one find the next coach. But there's no plan behind it of how do we support the coach? How do we ensure that coach comes back next year? Yep. Those sort of things. I know when I started, it was sort of like thrown in and, okay, see you next year when trials come around again. And
yep.
I had no idea what I was doing. I knew basketball. I didn't have an issue with that, but I didn't know how to coach. And so I was kind of sink or swim. Thankfully, I was able to be attach myself to some mentors and things like that. But again, that's because of who I am as a person. I have no issue asking for that. There's a lot of people who don't have the
yep.
the courage to walk up to someone and ask for that sort of help. And so I think, you know, obviously we, when it comes to sport in general, athlete focus is obviously the key. But I think we need to shift away from, you know, just almost like that conveyor belt of, okay, that team's got that coach, now move on, that team's got that coach. What's the plan behind it? How are we going to support them? How are we going to improve them? How are we going to see what they actually want to do with it? They might want to try and go further and try and advance to, say, a high-performance space, but they might not. And how do we cater to those? Because neither one of those is wrong. Not everyone should have to have that feeling that they have to be a high performance coach or, you know, coach for Australia. If you want to coach, you know, under eight domestic every year but be amazing at it, how do we support that? And how can we make sure that we're giving you what you need to do that?
And I think a couple of the thoughts that I would have with that, I ran a club, a major program, and there were about 50 employees within the club. And each year we knew that our cohort came from generally the athlete cohort. So we know we needed to incentivize the reasons. Why would you coach, actually? What benefit does that get? So I think for clubs who are looking to recruit, they need to be able to articulate the benefits of why. Helps you with confidence, means you can build your communication skills. It helps you better understand the ability of how to break down skills. It will help you communicate in the job later in life. So I think for clubs seeking coaches, they have to have a why. They've got to be able to articulate their why to the young generation, because they'll go and get a job somewhere else at McDonald's or somewhere else that might pay better, actually, and give them less hassle. But it certainly won't reap the same rewards as being a coach. So I think they have to articulate their why. And I think one of the things that I did do, particularly early on when I was building the club, is we built a really deliberate plan of building coaches from within. So we targeted them. We designed a mentor program. We made sure that once a quarter we ran a workshop on something that was relevant to different groups of the coaches in the club. And we really made sure that it was a place they wanted to coach in. So there was a reason if there was a challenge or a hassle, they felt that they were supported. So it takes a while to build that. But I do think club managers and programs, like, they need to be really deliberate about that design.
And it is complex because everyone will want something a little bit different from that part, whether it be similar to what you're talking about, Toby. Do they really want to advance or they want to be really good where they are? But it is largely a social connection that will keep people around sport. And it is amazing how many clubs and associations out there have a core group of people that were within about 2 or 3 years of each other age-wise that all come through at the same time but stick in the sport rather than it being one person trying to push through on their own or whatever the case might be there. It is building a community within your community, and it's not one that you can just dismiss. And it is such a vital part of what we do as coach educators and in the coaching space. If we have good coaches, our whole sport functions so much better because so many other people, like, fires get put out before they're even fires. It's those types of things, but it is such a welcoming environment. And we see the benefits of having great coaches, not necessarily because they become better players. That's a little bit of a byproduct of it, but they're just better people in general. And we talk about it a lot. You know, we can teach almost anyone to coach. If you're a good person, you'll be able to be a coach. That's kind of the easy part. It's the kill is the great coaches that are maybe not the best people, and trying to find the right people for the right players at the right time, that's the difficult part. And, you know, sometimes you have to have some difficult conversations with it. And Michelle, I'm sure you would have gone through some of these where it's like, look, you're not the right fit for this group of players. How did you approach that in that sort of capacity?
Look, I think be authentic and be honest, to be really honest. It sounds funny. So be authentic in how you manage a difficult or challenging conversation. And I guess as a program manager running a big program where some of the athletes are being pulled out of school, they've got extensive involvement within the sport, you've got to make sure that actually it's worthwhile. So it actually comes down to being honest with parents and honest with coaches. Like, sometimes the coaches may have had an aspiration to coach a higher level group. Well, simply saying, no, sorry, this year it's not your group or your squad or your team, there's got to be a reason why. Not because someone else is ahead of you, but, okay, this is now is not the right time, but if you develop these skills, X, Y, and Z, we will help you with that, and let's look at where you are in 12 months' time. Or if it's an athlete and you're looking at an athlete who's not ready, make sure you've got facts and data to back yourself up, all right? And it doesn't always – you don't always have to have it, but there's plenty of people that want those facts and data. So if you're having a conversation like that, be prepared, have your information well in advance. If it's a conversation that's going to have some bigger impacts and outcomes for people, – make sure you set the scene well and set up the conversation so that, one, you're comfortable, but the person you're having the conversation with is also comfortable.
And it's the ongoing discussions. If you have one coaches meeting per year and it's to decide when to appoint someone, who to appoint someone, that's going to be a highly anxious environment that everyone's going to be feeling tension in. If you can have that fortnightly, monthly check-in where it's just, and it might even just be via text at times with, hey, how's everything going? Is there anything that you need help with? Can you give me like 3 dot points on where you're at? Is there something I can do in that space? It's amazing how many times people don't want to ask, but if you open the door for them, they'll walk through it quite happily. And I think in that type of environment, we have so many coaches out there that need help, and they won't shy away from that. They all feel like they need help. But it is giving them that platform where they can ask questions and they can give opinions in kind of a failure-free environment. It's like, look, this is not a dumb question. How many times have we all said that when in courses, hey, there's no such thing as a dumb question? And it just alleviates a lot of pressure from a lot of the coaches.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the other thing that I would think about is I think we do need to be able to have a really good understanding of intergenerational challenges or changes. So I think we have to be able to understand how that 15, 16-year-old thinks and behaves and acts and communicates, because it's not the same as the 40-year-old. So I think understanding what I would term generational change, how do people relate, how do they connect, how do they best understand information, and be able to actually have the conversation with the people in front of you. And if you've got a really diverse group of coaches that you're working with, you make sure that you can break things down into smaller spaces where they are comfortable to have those conversations, I think.
Well, it's something I know you've done previously, Zoe, is talk to people from different backgrounds, like different nationalities, different walks of life and those sorts of things. And like, well, okay, here's a situation that's arisen. How would you deal with this to be culturally sensitive to everyone?
Yeah, well, there's so much more than just coaching or playing or anything really that comes in that makes up a person and that makes up a coach. And we need to understand that if we're going to then be able to really tap into, you know, who they are as people. And sometimes, you know, there's been times where there's been cultural barriers that I just don't understand. I don't understand it because it's not my culture, it's not my lived experience, it's not any of that. So thankfully I've got some really good people and connections that I can call upon to say, all right, how do I deal with this, particularly as somebody that's not from that. I it might not be culture, it might be socioeconomic, it might be, could be a million and one things. How do I deal with that? And how do I deal with that in the right way that doesn't come across condescending, but also proves that I do care, but is also not offensive. So it's a really bit of a tightrope at times to have to walk.
Yeah,
but like
is.
You said, Michelle, you know, that's about that preparation as well, making sure you've got all of that information. And I've brought those people into the room at times because I know I couldn't handle that conversation without, you know, crossing a line somewhere or being in some way offensive. So, I think at the heart of it, when we're talking about coaching, playing, whatever we're talking about here, I think at the heart of it, you've got to get to know people. You've got to get to know who you're talking to and what makes them tick. You know, there's an athlete I've been working with recently who is a fantastic basketball player, highly skilled, but through just fly-by conversations with her, basketball's not what she wants to do with her life. She wants to keep playing it, but she's got other, you know, sort of academic and job goals that she wants to really pursue and have basketball as her outlet and her love and her passion. If I didn't know that, she'd probably be coached differently and we may have lost her to the sport.
Yeah.
It's no different with coaches, just because more often than not they're probably adults. So, understanding who they are and what makes them tick and what makes them, I think is really important if you're going to really put a dent in what we're talking about.
Yeah. Look, essentially great coaches build relationships and have a foundational technical knowledge. So the best coaches will put the two pieces together. They can build really good relationships that don't have a really big power dynamic. Like there's a partnership, if you like, between the athlete and the coach, but they have to have some technical capabilities as well. And I think it's the two of them together that are critical. And in this day and age, I think it's absolutely critical we can do what's called inclusive coaching or inclusive communication. And I think I probably learnt a lot along the way as a seasoned veteran, if you like, from coaching. My experience, I spent years, decades, working with Eastern European and Chinese and Asian coaches. And it wasn't till I was away overseas a couple of weeks ago and I was delivering a program for a whole week to a group of French people. And they said, oh, you're really good in articulating slowly and deliberately. And I said, it's a piece I've learned over time. And I think you're right. I think it starts with an awareness. I have an awareness that the communication methods need to be different, the respect, the language, the body language. Those things are all going to look different to people from different backgrounds and different cultures. So don't make assumptions, but ask questions and meet the person where they're at.
It's a really great point. And funnily enough, I was we do actually have like some little sound effects that sort of come in throughout this, Michelle, so apologies. But I was talking to a coach from Guinea not too long ago who spoke really great English, like was phenomenal. He's like, look, I've got to tell you, Rob, I understand like every third sentence you say because you talk far too quick for where my English is at. And it's ever since then, I've been so conscious about dealing with other cultures that maybe I can be too quick to give my point and move on to the next thing really, really fast, so to speak, whereas I'm not really picking up, are they understanding, are they taking it in, are they almost in that sink or swim that you talked about before where it's like, look, I'm just trying to get to the end of this sentence so I can understand where he was going with this. But it's a really fascinating space that, and it's one of the things that I think I hear from coaches the most is that kids have changed. They're not like they used to be. It's like, yep, they have. And if we don't adapt, well, who's really at fault? It's not kids. Yeah. Like that's their world now. Yeah. It's our job to meet them there and try and find ways to help them out. And I know I did send you through some questions before, Michelle. I'll jump sort of to the end and come back because I think that'll actually help us a lot in that sort of space as what we're talking through. So when you first reached out to us, it was last year, talking about your Leaky Pipeline project that you've put together. Do you want to just give us like a little bit of an overview as to what that looks like and then we'll sort of unpack some things from there?
Yeah. So stepping into this role at the AIS, I was tasked with understanding the motivations and the barriers for women coaches who are working in the high-performance landscape with the intent, if we can understand those pieces in Australia, what it looks like, we can come up with a framework to be able to deliver some deliberate interventions and strategies that work, all right? And it started with looking at the representation. So we know that around 10% of our national team head coaches are women. Now in basketball, of the, you know, the Opals team is coached by Sandy Brondello, and I see she's just been reappointed again through to LA, which is absolutely fabulous. But there's plenty of sports that are female sports or are female teams, and they're not coached by females. So what we wanted to do was to deeply understand what is the subcultures within Australia and what are the influences. So we spent the first couple of years doing a series of workshops, and really what we wanted to do, Rob, was to look at what we call fuel and friction forces. So fuel is an example of a fuel force is providing money to run a workshop for women coaches in basketball. All right, fantastic. But the friction comes from the men potentially saying, well, what about me? Where's my opportunity? Another example of fuel is having a quota. Okay, we want to have a certain number of coaches on our teams at national championships or state championships, and you must have a female on your team, whether it's an assistant or a head coach. So that's a lever or a force that we can apply. But we had to understand by doing something, what's the opposite piece. Now, if you can do that and look through that lens, then you can start to create change. So what we did is delivered 18 months ago an action plan. So the action plan was deliberately not a document that sits on a shelf. The action plan has 10 key recommendations. So one of those recommendations, as an example, is to build a career support program that supports women coaches in transition. Another example is to look at the framework by which we develop coaching talent. So we had 10 recommendations, and over the last 18 months, we've been delivering on those recommendations. And what we've looked at is this is a system piece. So we need to tackle this. If it's a system problem, there isn't a single solution. There's no silver bullet. There's no magic answer to this. So when we look at system change, if you like, we know we need to look at the individual level. So the individual coach, how can we help support them? we need to look at the interpersonal level or the relationships between people. The next layer is that organisational piece. How do we help organisations look at structures and policies and pieces that can help or hinder? And then the final piece is this social cultural piece, which we've been chatting about. So what we've learned is that to create a system change, not to help one individual coach in basketball or one club in basketball, if we want to create a system change, we need to test some interventions or strategies or initiatives to nudge the system at each of those levels. So a good example would be providing a workshop program for women coaches over a period of time that we monitor, evaluate, and understand impact. But you can't do it in isolation. So you would involve their club or their organization with the activity in some way. And you would look at trying to help organizations understand the challenges that women coaches may face. And then you would also then look at like that social cultural piece is how are we creating inclusive environments that are welcoming for everybody, irrespective of gender. So we've got 10 recommendations from the action plan. We're nudging the system at various points, and basketball, what you shared at the showcase last year was a fabulous example of nudging the system for early entry coaches. So we're looking at the action plan essentially through four focus areas. The first one, we know behavior, culture, and environment is the number one influencer. So we have to tackle that. The second area is looking at systems that support diversity, structures, policies, rules, job descriptions, different ways in which policies may actually prevent women coaches from participating or helping or supporting. The third area is an example that you've delivered, is a strategy for development. How can we enhance development for women coaches? And the last one, which is another example of what you're delivering with this podcast, is visibility and storytelling. How can we elevate the really good positive stories so that it's a positive focus on what's happening? And how do we use that to amplify the little bright spots or the little pockets of things that are working really well?
And it was a brilliant day last year. Like, we really enjoyed ourselves. It was out at Essendon Football Club. There was so many sports in attendance, and just listening to and hearing everyone else's stories about what they've gone through, there was a level of alarm for me personally in that, man, we're not doing enough here. There was an element of comfort in that, oh, we're all going through this at the same time, and there are some common solutions that we can all sort of tap into as well. And we obviously presented on the Accelerated Women's Coaching Program, which is fantastic, that is going to run again this year. So 8 women that went through last year, 8 women that will go through this year, with the hope of that starts to build a little bit of a critical mass of people that have been through it together, shared experience, that can now help each other out. Like, I know, Zoe, you were heavily involved with last year's group in particular, but there's actually some excitement around this year's group as well. And what can we do differently? How can we do it better? What can we tap into from last year? Those types of things as well, because of the 8 women, I think we had 5 of the 8 applied for state teams. Every single one of them had a higher team than they had the year before. So they've been identified as having done some additional work and being rewarded with that, with a promotion of some sort. And of the 5 that applied for state teams, I think 4 of them were successful in being involved in state teams. So from a numbers perspective, great. Our challenge is how can we roll this out to everyone rather than just 8 per year. But from the women coaching perspective, though, like, this wasn't something that was available to you when you came through, obviously. So how is that challenge, I suppose, now to get more in this space?
Yeah, and I think the hard part, the really hard part, and it's the barrier we hear from a lot of associations, state sporting organisations, even national sporting organisations across the board, is we don't have time, or we don't have resources, or we don't have, somebody, we're all too busy to get this done. At the end of the day, we've just got to do it. Yep. It's one of the things that, it's technically, if you were to read my position description, that's not in there, but it is something that I'm definitely passionate about and I think is valuable. There's so many advantages to having more female coaches involved, and I'm definitely not saying, it annoys me that I have to put this disclaimer in, but I'm definitely not saying no male coaches. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I want to upskill and provide the platform for female coaches to find the confidence in themselves to seek the education, seek the experience, to then, you know, if they do want to progress, when they put their hand up, they're ready. Like, there's not this, we're not pushing them in and saying, just go for it, so we can, like you said before, Michelle, you know, make up numbers or or hit a quota, or, you know, it's like, no, here we're going to, we've identified you. No, you're not ready to, for example, coach a state team, but we can do X, Y, and Z together. If you meet us halfway, let's see what happens. And we're here and we create this little community around you. That, so it's not just all like myself, or, you know, it's, there's, you know, multiple, I've engaged with a lot of our, female coaches that are highly experienced, that are looking to sort of wind down a little bit from coaching, but they want to stay involved somehow. This has been a brilliant way to keep them involved. So match them up in our Country Metro Challenge, which is just 2 days. I have all young female coach, up-and-coming female coaches, head coaches, but their assistant coach is one of these coach mentors almost. So, you know, being able to have access to that, that's now another person that they can call if they need to, and another person in their community. And then within that group, they're now a group, and that, that community's there as well. So I think it is challenging. It is, but it's so worth it. And yeah, I think the friction that you were talking about before also really annoys me, because and look, feel free to cut this out if you think we need to, but here we go. I understand that from a male coach's perspective, when we have these female coaching programs, that, you know, there's that, why not me? Why not us? What about men? What? I completely understand that. But what also needs to be understood from the other side is that has been what has been available since the dawn of time for men and not women. So we are not trying to get them a competitive advantage or anything like that. What we're trying to do is level out the playing field a little bit, level out the opportunity, level out the experience and the, you know, you look at it. I often sit in rooms where I'm the only female in there regularly. At the start, I was really bad at it. Now I probably annoy 90% of the people in there, but but
we haven't served either, but you've spitballed a number.
But again, not everybody has that, you know, makeup. Like, it was pure stubbornness that kept me in it. That, you know, I was like, no, I'm not going to let this. I hated that experience, but I'm not going to let it beat me. Like, it was competitive and stubborn, but not everybody has that sort of as a part of their makeup. So it's definitely not like we are trying to say yes all women, no all men, you know, none of that. That is not what we're doing. We are trying to level out the playing field. And sometimes equality can feel like oppression when it comes from a place of privilege. So, you know, when you've been somebody that's been able to benefit from the privilege of things sort of being set up for you, when that then that equality starts to come in, which I think, you know, we're on the right track, it can feel like oppression. what I would say is that's how we felt since the beginning of time. Yeah. So just, you know, again, I'm not trying to incite anything or anything like that, but I think sometimes we have to be hit with things like that just to, you know, I mean, Rob, you hopefully you're willing to have the conversation, but you've always been great for female coaches, but it wasn't really until you sort of peeked behind the curtain with me that you saw just how bad it can be for female coaches at times.
For sure. Like, I've been really fortunate, and for those that may not be aware, Zoe has assisted me before when I've been the head coach, and I've assisted Zoe when she's been the head coach. And it does work quite well. Like, we can be fairly candid with each other when maybe other relationships can't be. But yeah, there were certainly times where it's like, I didn't realize you had to go through this. Like, this is a really negative experience that I probably wouldn't have been subjected to in that sort of space. Like, and I mean, there was a really eye-opening experience. It was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I went to a women in sport lunch down at Cadinia Park in Geelong. And I walked in there and there would have been 150 to 200 women involved in sport and there were two males. And I was one of the two.
You're
and,
brave.
Yeah, and straight away, like, we found each other really quickly. And it's like, hey, what's going on? And it's like, oh, this is what this feels like. Yeah. Like, it was that kind of thing where, I look at our coaching course numbers at that community level where people are involved for the fun of the sport, the enjoyment of the kids. We're not at 50-50 by any means, but we're not miles away from it, in particular when they go through courses. But it is amazing how as you go up the levels, our numbers dwindle. Rapidly, 100%. Like in that sort
and,
of space.
And I think the point that you both make, I think there's the critical piece is you want the best coaches to have the opportunity. You don't want a structure, and whether it's a culture piece, whether it's a rule piece because of the way in which your programs and courses are delivered, you want the best coaches to have the opportunities to coach, all right, and not be turned away or turned off. And I often quote a particular example. One of our stories that we heard from a coach, the worst 2 weeks of her life was going to a level 2 coaching course. Now, that's not a great storytelling piece for the sport,
yep.
But you're exactly spot on. The higher up you go, the less women there are. We know that. That's a given. And every sport is really different. But what we need to be able to do is to encourage sports like basketball to be really deliberate and really intentional on looking at the learning design, the framework that sits around the programs and the courses. So we look at the opportunities for development as one piece and the opportunity to have access to get experience. So the two of you have just talked really clearly about an opportunity where you were able to co-coach together, right? And the fact that you were both able to take slightly different roles and be in a different role with the other person is brilliant because it gives you a different experience. Imagine that benefit for the athletes you're coaching. Like, it's magic. But plenty of sports wouldn't think about that, but that's a deliberate piece in looking at how do you upskill or enable opportunities or access for others. So I think that's a brilliant story.
Well, and I still remember my first coach when I was in under eight. I was probably about 6 foot tall and under eight. So I was one of those very much early developed kids that was a lady that was just lovely. Like, she couldn't have cared less if we won, if we lost. Like, there was far more empathy, care. And when I moved up to under 10s, I had some male coaches and it was kind of counterintuitive to what we were sort of like. We're still in that developmental age group in under 10s. And there is almost this unwritten rule that we'll have the women and the ladies coaching the younger age groups. But when it gets serious, we'll put the men in and to coach that. And nothing could be further from the truth. Like, the male ego needs to come back a little bit more towards the middle on that one, as to maybe some empathy would go a very long way and help you be a better coach in that space. But we have so many brilliant women in our sport tactically that are capable. And there's almost this unwritten rule that if you're a woman and girl in that coaching space, you have to coach girls. And I understand why it's come across that way, because, you know, if you can see it, you can beat it, et cetera, et cetera. But there's nothing to be said that you can't go and coach boys. Like, there are some brilliant women coaches that are more than capable of going and doing that. But the first thing that I hear anytime I bring that up with someone is, I'm not ready for that. I can't do that. And it's almost this like wall that comes up straight away, yeah. that, look, I feel more comfortable on this side, but I'm not comfortable on that side. How do we go about tackling that as a sport?
So it's a great question. I think we've been really looking into the – we've probably spent the last 12 to 18 months looking at this concept of what we call gendered and ungendered learning. So what's the environment look like when the room is all women learning together, and what does it look like, and at what point in a learning journey does that fit? So we've looked at those pieces. And I think one of the fundamental pieces that's come out in a piece of work we did a couple of years ago was to look at the impact of a decade of learning opportunities that the AIS provided for coaches. And the number one thing that came through that enabled and fostered their learning to be so impactful was the connection they formed with the people they were learning beside. So, Zoe, you talked about that before. Connection was a key piece. And I think providing people a connection, whether that connection is to help learning, whether it's to help mentor them, whether it's a sponsor, whether it's someone that's sponsoring their progression or saying, no, you can do this, or providing them deliberate opportunities, connection is fundamental to opportunity and to learning. And it's really come through really strongly. So that then comes back down to the environment you work in and the relationships you build.
Yeah, it's one of the things I really enjoyed with the Leaky Pipeline is you had a it was almost like a persona for so many people. And I think for a lot of people, it's worth going to have a look at this, like especially women in coaching in particular, because I can nearly guarantee you will go through those personas and go, that's me. Like there would
I did.
I figured you might have.
Yeah.
But it really was fascinating to sort of say, well, okay, if this is me, what does it look like? Do I come up against these barriers? Who can I align myself with that will help me in this? And it might not be the same person all the way through. Like there are plenty of times, obviously Zoe and I, we talk a lot about coaching in general, but there are plenty of times where you'll go off and talk to someone completely different and get their perspective on it. There's no offense taken on my end. It's actually a really good thing to come in with a diverse opinion and just a different way of doing things. And it's not necessarily to say one of us is right or wrong or anything like that. It's just we need to hear the other side of it, because sometimes yeah. we don't always take that into consideration. And I mean, what are some of the other big barriers you see for women entering into coaching, Michelle? And that could be at any level. That could be community yeah. level through to high level.
So what we learned early on through the concept of the Leaky Pipeline, it evolved probably through the first 12 months. We kept hearing stories. And the stories were women were coming into the system, but they were leaving at various points, thus the Leaky Pipeline. So essentially we learned there are coaches who don't even enter the system. They don't come in. They go, I'm not going to coach because I don't want to be like that, or I don't want that lifestyle. So depending on the sport, because every sport is different, there is clearly an area of need to target early entry coaches. And we know there is a definite athlete to coach transfer, but it requires some really deliberate care. So what we heard is the women can't get into the high performance coaching system. Once they come in, we know there are what we call early leavers. So the early leavers are going, actually, this isn't what I thought it was, or they have a really bad experience and go, you know what? I can go and get a full-time job doing X, Y, and Z and be very happy. I don't need this. So we know that there's early leavers. We know that there's coaches who come into the system and maybe juggling and managing a part-time coaching gig with work. That's okay. But potentially when they have additional family commitments, it might be caring for an older parent. It might be having children themselves. Regardless of what the reason is, that becomes a barrier. So what they do is they leave the pipeline, and often out of sight, out of mind, they never return. So we learned that there's these departures. So there's a kind of a roadblock at the beginning. There's early departures. The parental piece is really interesting because we see that as what we call a hidden talent pool of opportunity. So if you can identify the coaches who were in the system, were delivering, left for parental reasons, whatever it was, track them, monitor them, support them, find mechanisms of supporting their return. So that's an opportunity for all of us. So we know there's that early entry, we know there's that parental piece, and then we know towards the latter part of coaching careers, there's coaches who just get to the point where, you know what, this is not sustainable, the way I'm being treated, and we've heard some horrific stories, is not sustainable. Actually, I'm going to be valued somewhere else. And so what we don't want is our very best coaches coaching the pinnacle events for Australia as being hardened warriors who are just, they stay there because, right? You want them there at their peak of their performance. You want them contributing. And everyone, regardless of gender or intersectionality, you want them at their best at that point. And what happens is they get to the point where many coaches will get to a point of burnout. And it's not a gendered thing. It's a high-performance thing. So we know the high-performance strategy, the Winwell, the HP 2032 plus strategy is critical in being able to articulate that you can win well. And performance should not come at a cost of personal well-being. So the leaky pipeline, if you like, articulates and has helped us understand the challenges at entry, the opportunities when there are departures to create re-entry, such as a returnship. Like, yeah. I think it's a great idea, right? But how do you create, we've got a parental leave toolkit. So clubs and organisations can pick that up, jump on the website, pick it up, look at it and go, okay, what can we do? We've got a fabulous coach going on leave. How can we work with them with this? Or we've got a recruitment toolkit. How can we use that to help recruit the best coaches, not just the ones that we know of?
Yeah, there's so much in that, what you just said too, Michelle. Oh, my goodness. One of the things that really stood out for me is the lifestyle that we inflict. Like, I don't know, other sports are probably the same, but the lifestyle in basketball that we inflict on our coaches is unsustainable, particularly for our female coaches, mostly because it's you have to be at, you know, this every weekend, this five times a week, this, you know, this time. And if you miss any of them, that's it. You can't make the next step or, you know, those sort of things. Unsustainable when it's not a full-time role. Unsustainable for people that live regionally and have to then travel. You know, you're adding travel on top of that. Really unsustainable for female coaches that if they are parents, if they're mothers. I've had this I was coaching in an international tournament. My assistant coach had two young boys and her husband is a coach as well. And I asked her, I said, oh, you know, what's it like? Well, you know, leaving the boys, how does it? And she goes, oh, they're okay. Like, you know, we've prepared them for it and everything. She goes, but it's what people say that bothers me. And I was like, what do they say? And it's like, oh, I can't believe, you know, things like, I can't believe you're leaving your children. And she's like, yeah, with their father. Like, I'm not leaving them with the random down the street. Like, I'm leaving them with their father. But then when her husband gets coaching opportunities, it's met with, hey, congratulations, good luck, yep, this is great, you know. So that's a societal thing that, yeah, you know, that's a pressure that unfortunately as just a sport we don't have control over. We can't, you know, but flexibility for our coaches and particularly our female coaches I think is key to keeping them in the sport,
yep,
especially keeping them if they do leave to say have children and, you know, just staying in touch with them. Letting them know that, you know, hey, it's still here when you come back, and when you're ready to come back, we're still here, and you know, the program might run three or four times a week. Just come once a week. Come once a week. So, and what you can make, and that flexibility is really important. A lot of people have said to me when I've spoken about flexibility, oh, well, then you know, then they don't turn up, and then they don't do this. I haven't had that issue. I've actually had the opposite, where then they're doing everything they can to try and come as as often as they can, you know. Like there were times where coaches who would only be available, say, for a Monday, they're then turning up on a Thursday and we're like, what are you doing here? And they're like, oh, well, you know, this, this and this happened, so I was available. So, you know, I thought I'd come down. Great. So I have it, this almost this concept that people are going to really shirk the system if we give them that flexibility. It actually, for mine, in my experience, it's gone the other way, and it's been so highly appreciated that we've kept coaches within the system, even if it is, you know, just once a week or for 6 weeks or whatever, or that one weekend or whatever it is. But I think also another opportunity for us, and it's something I want to try and really target moving forward, are also empty nesters. So the kids have, you know, they've been a basketball parent, and anybody that's taken their kid into the VJBL, even for one season, let alone from under 12s to under 18s, knows that that is such a big commitment and it's such a big part of your life that's gone. And once the child or the athlete either moves on or, you know, starts to drive themselves and is less dependent on the parents, in the beginning it's great. They go, oh, isn't this nice all this time? And then about 2 weeks after that, it's like, oh, this is a bit awful. I don't like this.
There's another person in my house that I have to talk to now. Like, this is no good.
I want something to do. So they're the ones that I think also is a bit of a an opportunity for coaches to try and get them involved as well in some way, shape or form.
Yep. And I think you're spot on. So what we've tried to do with the project is look at where are the opportunities. Where is the hidden talent pool? And your empty nesters are absolutely. And the other thing that you talked about, there's a real opportunity that can actually enhance athlete performance with a job share. So we've learned some brilliant examples which can accommodate the part-timers. And in actual fact, if it's structured well, they'll always give more than the 0.5 that they're meant to give. You've given that example. But the athletes are the ones that are going to benefit because they've got two people who give 100% plus of their time when they're there, and you've got two diverse perspectives. So not every athlete's going to connect with every coach. So I think the ability to create job share matches, like job matching, we've learnt really good examples of how that's worked in netball, hockey, sailing, and at the top level. So if it works there, it's got to work at a club level, you know, or an organisational regional level, I think.
And I think part of that too is if you are a woman in that space, ask the question if it's possible. Like rather than withdraw
just
yourself. Yeah, like it is, it's one of those things where I can't do that, so I'm just going to withdraw from it. No. Like ask, is there a way in which this can work in another capacity? And it's
but
amazing
the,
how many times
on the flip
works.
Side of that, though, too, if you're a club, an association, and you have a coach that is withdrawing, ask if there's anything that you can do. Is there an opportunity? Can you come once a week? Can you come, you know, have a little bit of a different role? Or is there something we can do just to keep you involved? Because, yeah, if we can – they may just be withdrawing because they think that – it is expected that they have to do all or nothing.
Yep. Yeah, no, you're spot on. And I think one of the things we've learned very, very early on, one of the really big statements was we want to earn our roles, our spots, our positions, our roles on team through our own merits. We don't want to be given it through a quota system, all right? Puts a target on our back and makes us feel like crap, makes us feel like we haven't earned it.
Yep.
It's that fuel and friction piece. And to be able to provide recognition of what your achievements are, it's absolutely critical, no matter what gender.
Yep.
Michelle, you've been super generous with your time, and I'm mindful of how long we're keeping you for on a Friday afternoon, so I'm very appreciative of that. I've got two last questions for you in this sort of space. So the first one is there any advice out there for male coaches to make it a more welcoming environment for women to jump into this space in particular? And is there any advice for women coaches that are teetering on the edge of, do I want to do this or do I not want to do this?
So the first one I would say just ask.
Yep.
We learnt really clearly. We actually, like, it seems really simple, right? But regardless of gender, if you're building relationships, if you're building a program, if you want the best people involved and feel like they belong, ask them what they need. And it would actually, it was one of the parental, one of the examples we got was from a coach who was returning from maternity leave. And she said the best thing that they did was just ask me what I needed. So I think the best advice I could give is ask the person what they need, and whether they're from a different cultural background or they're a female coach is irrelevant. So you don't walk in their shoes, seek to understand. And your second question was about a coach who's teetering on the edge of, or do I do this, do I not? Build some conversations and understand what your options are. But the other piece I would say is build your own personal network. So I have this concept that I've built up over time where I think it's really important that coaches build their learning network. Who do I learn from? So how can I learn from Rob and Zoe? I mean, I've picked up things from our conversation today, right? So you add to your learning network of how you can understand the space you live in and work and improve your skills as a coach. So that's the learning space. But there's plenty of times, particularly in high-performance coaching, but across all boards of coaching, where there's enormous challenges. So find a support network. That might be a peer. It might be a buddy. And I think that's where the club or the organization can come in and help, because sometimes you don't want to talk to someone in the club. You need a conversation outside. So I think that support network and that learning network are two concepts that every coach actually needs.
That's brilliant advice straight off of the line. And it seems so annoyingly simple, but it is so accurate at the same time. Like, the more conversations we have, the better off this is going to be. Michelle, I cannot thank you enough for your time on this, but by the same token, I cannot congratulate you enough for your work on the Leaky Pipeline. And I know it's not just you, there are a mountain of people that have contributed to that in that space as well. And I would really recommend, regardless of age, gender, background, whatever the case might be, go and have a look at it. It's if you just Google the Leaky Pipeline, I'm assuming it'll be the first thing that comes up. It's that or a plumbing business or something like that. But, you know, surely go and have a look at it and really understand what other people are going through in that space, because I think as a sport, we're in a great position where we have so many women participating in basketball. We can be as close to that 50-50 split as anyone, I think, is capable of getting to. Like, it can be a really great space for everyone. So congratulations, first off, but thank you so much for your time in this one.
Look, you're very welcome. And I think you're spot on in saying we've heard over 250 stories from women coaches, some of them horrific and some of them absolutely fabulous. And so essentially what it is is a representation of those stories, which has been an honour to be able to share and elevate, but it's also a really deliberate action piece of, okay, if you have this problem, this is what you could do. Yep. So just go to the AIS and look at women in high performance coaching and it'll come up for sure.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Michelle.
You're very welcome.
Massive thanks to Michelle DeHeiden for jumping in on that. Like I said in the podcast, it was a Friday afternoon, which is not normally primo time for everyone's attention spans, which I do appreciate, as you're probably listening to this on a Friday afternoon when the podcast drops. But brilliant to hear Michelle's take on all things coaching, but in particular in that women's coaching space. Like, Zoe, I know you've got a lot of time for Michelle and the message she gives in particular. And I will drop the link to the Leaky Pipeline information in the show notes as well. But a really great message, I think, from Michelle throughout the podcast. So,
yeah, it's just, I know it can sometimes be a little bit polarizing at times for particularly some of our male coaches in the space, and you know, there can be that this again type attitude. But one of the things that the data shows us is just how valuable it is having a diverse range of coaches, and diverse particularly including genders. So you know, it's really important, and it's really important that we supply the opportunities for growth and for education so our female coaches can succeed. Whether we like it or not, we're wired differently, and that's, you know, probably not going to change anytime soon. So we have to approach things differently. You know, what works for one won't work for the other. So, and the leaky pipeline, if you jump on and have a look at it, goes through so much of that, and is fantastic information. And particularly if you're an association who is committed to trying to increase their female coaching numbers, I highly suggest you jump on there and have a look at it, because there's some really valuable information there.
And for both genders, in all honesty, I think it's great for the women to know they're supported in this space and there is work being done around nurturing and developing that level of talent, but also for the men and boys out there that may be oblivious to some of the things that our women and girls go through in that coaching space. I think it's a really important area that so many of our men and boys that do coach can be an ally in that space and be a little bit of a support network, whether it be formal, informal, anywhere in between, whether it might just be catch up for a coffee or just a random text message, hey, how are you going with this? Like, are you still interested in doing this? Those sorts of things make such a massive difference. And no mass coincidence that this is dropping the day before International Women's Day, which is obviously a really great promotion from all walks of life as to the need for a really diverse and enriching environment that we all live, work, thrive, survive in, those types of things. So for the coaching space in particular, there's a reason that we approached Michelle about this, and she couldn't have been more accommodating to jump into this. So massive thanks to Michelle and the work that she's done in this area.
And if you're a female coach listening to this, we absolutely, as a collective, as a sport, need to make sure we're providing opportunities for female coaches to access education, access, repetitions, access all that sort of stuff. There's also a responsibility from us as female coaches to meet halfway as well. So, you know, one of the things that I don't think I would be sitting in this position now had I just sort of sat back and tried to wait for everything to come to me. So there does have to be an element of, you know, step up, you know, like get
be uncomfortable.
Yeah, like, and it's okay. And, yeah, and if you fail, that's okay too. That's how we grow and that's how we learn. And now is so much better than, you know, 10, 15 years ago, because there are now these programs and these support networks that can sit around you and help you understand that going male, female, it doesn't matter. Going through coaching, there is going to be setbacks. There's going to be disappointments. There's going to be things that, you know, you miss out on that you want and all those sort of things. But where we've got to be better as a female cohort is not letting that end us. You know, like I know when I first missed out, 2014, I think I applied for my first head coaching role for a state team and I missed out. The first thought in my mind, I don't want to do this anymore. And it wasn't that I didn't want to do it, but it was, I was upset. And
you're masking hurt.
I was hurt, yeah, and I was trying to protect myself and trying to, I was embarrassed too. I was embarrassed that I'd gone for something and didn't get it and all those sort of things. So that's something we need to make sure we've got these groups, we've got these numbers sitting around our female coaches because – and all coaches, really, to make sure that, you know, we're not losing great people to what our crazy brains decide to tell us to try and protect us.
Yeah, and it is amazing how much better it has got over the the last 10, 15 years, and how much better it can get for the next 10 to 15 as well. And it is very much about making it better for the next generation that comes through so that they don't have to deal with the same setbacks or adversity. You know, they'll deal with different ones, which is inevitable. That's going to happen throughout the course. And one thing I will say is that it's amazing anytime I take a coaching course, how very receptive the women that are in that course are to learning and development. And, you know, I'd love a little bit more of the humility sometimes on the men's side of that, because there are plenty that come into this with just, I know everything you're about to do here and you can't talk to me in this way because I already know
I played X amount of games of domestic basketball, so therefore I know more than you.
Exactly. That's
don't get me wrong, there's female coaches that are like that too.
But
like,
you know,
it's,
what? I can only think of one in all my time in this role that have been that way. Like, and that the only reason they stick out is because there's been only one.
Because there's one.
Yeah, like with the men, they almost just kind of fade into, oh, it's another person that's just trying to get around the work.
Yeah.
The women coaches are prepared to do the work. And that's the bit I love about it. And I think from us as a sport, we have a responsibility to support that and try and nurture it as much as we possibly can. So if there is anyone out there that is looking to progress with their coaching or does want some help or support, reach out. Like, this is very much an open call. I know we've got Accelerated Women's Coaching Program. We're only in a position where we can give position like those roles to 8 women. So there is a part of that program that is a bit of a pay it forward task where we want them to go and upskill the next group of women to come through as well. So there is a hope that we can expand this out into a little bit of a coaching tree that's going to be a really beneficial one for everyone. But it is a complex space as well to try and get money, resources, numbers, and all those sorts of things. So if you've got an idea on something, hit us with it. Like, it's if we can do it, great. If we can't, maybe we can't do it right now, but we might be able to do it in the future. Throw it out there and let's see what traction we get with it.
Or if we can help in any way as well,
for sure.
We will, absolutely. I'm passionate about this. You can probably hear it in sometimes the passion might overtake what I'm trying to say and I go off on a bit of a tangent. But this means a lot to me, and I'm really glad you use the word coaching tree there, Rob, because one of the things I like to live by, particularly in this role, is the saying, and there's about 8 different versions of it, but it's basically, the world gets better when people plant trees of which the shade they know they'll never sit. And this is how we have to be as female coaches right now. We might have to wade through some stuff to make it better. Who comes next, and make it easier for who comes next as well. Make sure those doors aren't closed. Make sure there's access. Make sure they, you know, have opportunities. And if they don't want them, that's fine. But if they do, they're ready for them. And that is the aim. It's, I mentioned it before, it's not to get them ahead. It's to get them on a level playing field. So if they do want to put their hand up for something, you know, that opportunity's there.
Well, it is all about reaching back down the pathway as well. Like, if you have been fortunate enough or good enough to progress with your coaching, try and develop the next cohort that comes. Like, that's a big part of it. It's amazing how much a phone call, a text message, an email can mean from someone that you may think doesn't know who you are, what you're about, or anything like that. But just that little bit of support goes a really long way, I find. I thought you were going down a different path with the gardening and the trees and all that sort of stuff, given your newfound interest in gardening, which is going to test the patience, I'm imagining. But we'll see how it goes.
But there's also the joy you get out of it. You know, the joy I feel watching, you know, like we spoke about Mace at the start, watching her grow.
For sure.
And, you know, that – oh, it hits the heart, and it's a feeling that's to me worth more than any scoreboard win. So, you know, really, I would really implore our female coaches in particular to really get on board this. And if you want to, you know, if you need help, if you want to try and start something yourself, you want to bounce some ideas, whatever it is, let us know, because we are here to help.
Absolutely. Zoe, thank you very much for jumping in. A reminder to everyone, Accelerated Women's Coaching Program applications are now open. So please get those in, and we'll come back with you with something we can do in this space. Michelle DeHayden, thank her very much, obviously, for jumping in. If you want more information about the Leakley Pipeline, you can jump on our show notes and you'll be able to find it from there. Coaches, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch everyone next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform, And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.